you're on the hook for like screwing up like the bag of flour.
So you want to do a research for period piece films?
I think that would be cool. You don't.
That would be. No, I think it'd be awesome. I think you and Anne can have a great time doing this, and Carissa and I will figure out what else we can do. How we could actually make money and for life, because I don't think you make a lot of money doing that.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, how about we welcome everybody to episode 62 of the Trailer Junkies podcast?
Here we go again.
Yep, here we go again. Hop on for a wild ride. 40 mile per hour car speed chases? Is that what you call it? 40 mile per hour, like, I don't know.
Bicycle chases.
No, come on. When we get to the highwaymen, I mean, they're on these like Model A Fords going like 40, but they try and make it look like they're like really whirling around. But we'll get to that in a little bit. So how was your week this week?
You had a week off. You start.
Yeah, I did have a week off. Week was good. I mean, you know, it's like for some reason our school calendar, instead of like 3 weeks at the Christmas break like we've typically done over the past few years, they went back to the 2 weeks, but then they gave us a week off in February, and then there's going to be another spring break in April.
Sweet.
You know, I mean, yeah, we go back way early though, like early in August to get it, I guess.
At that, we do too. Yeah, we go back like August 15th. That's where we are. It's crazy.
Yeah, mid-August. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You go to work, you do your thing, you got your routines, you know, but the nice thing about working in education, you do get a lot of time off, so I can't complain. How about you?
Well, it was a short week.
Oh, and really quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, really quick. So then with all the time off, I just did a lot of volume with my training and just got a lot of bike riding in, you know, and I was out for 90 miles today and, you know, I'm really tired, but hey, here we are, man. The show must go on.
That's right. You're powering through.
Powering through, man. Powering through. Nap time and lots of protein and carbohydrates and sleep. That's what I call it.
I'm getting ready for a packed weekend. We have a weekend full of the final swim meets of the weekend of the season.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. So then after this, then there's no more swim?
Then they take a while off, and I think they still train through like the off season, and then it picks up in a couple months.
And this is both Audrey and Bryce?
Just Audrey.
And what's her like her primary stroke or her like specialty or whatever you call it?
Oh, I don't even know. She does all of them. You know, she does the backstroke, the breaststroke, I think the breaststroke is one of her best.
So she's pretty fast at the breaststroke?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Like at her age, do they do the butterfly?
Yeah. They do the butterfly. She does that too.
They do the butterfly. Okay.
It's so funny. They always ask me like, you know, they ask me to do the timing to volunteer. So I'm down there and I'm doing the timing. And then I have a kid come up to me and he says like, do I have to touch with both hands or how do I turn around? I'm like, dude, I have no idea. I'm not going to tell you the wrong thing and have your parents come and yell at me because you DQ'd. All this stuff is very complicated. I don't know the difference between breaststroke and what's that one you say? Butterfly. I think one's under the water, one's out of the water. But as far as how many dolphin kicks you can do off the wall, go ask your coach. I am not the guy to be asking those questions.
So do they, I mean, they give the penalties if like you do the flip kick turn thing underwater with only one touch of a hand versus two?
It depends on the stroke. It depends on, you know, the time of day. It depends on whether the ref catches you or not. It's very, very crazy. And the worst thing is, like, I think you can only do two dolphin kicks off the turn on one of these strokes. And yeah, they DQ like little kids and stuff. They don't care. They're like, got to learn the strokes. Got to learn the rules, you know?
It's like, man, I could just imagine just berating like some little 5-year-old who just learned to swim, telling them they're doing it wrong. My God. So what beer do you have tonight?
So tonight I went to the store.
Handy Market?
No, I wish. I was thrown off this week. I had to go and get Bryce from Anne because Audrey has a performance tonight. So I was not able to go to the Handy Market. I went to my Ralph's and I picked up like a little can of Santa Monica beer.
Okay.
And I go to the checkout, and at the checkout, I'm like, all right, well, let's just put this beer. And she scans the beer and it's like $16.
For the can?
And I was like, for a little 12-ounce can of Santa Monica IPA Boardwalk or something. I'll find what it was.
So did someone like take apart like a 12 pack or something and just left one beer that scanned?
No, this was like in the build your own 6-pack / single section. So there's a
$16 can of IPA? Not even a bottle? Holy.
Not even a bottle, like, yeah, you know, it's not Chimay up in here. It's, you know, it's just a can of local Santa Monica beer, so.
I'm sorry, no IPA is worth $16.
So I had her quickly put that away, and I wanted to get home, so I just said, I'm going to go with the Triple Carmelite.
Oh, sweet. There you go. Well, you got the proper glass for it.
This is the last one of the Triple Carmelite.
Oh, so you didn't buy it, you had it.
I had it.
Yeah, I got you. Cool. So while you're doing that, I have a quality crafted Tusk and Grain brandy barrel aged coffee porter. So it's brewed and bottled by St. Archer Brewing Company, San Diego, California.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of them.
I would have paid $12 for that.
Dude, it was only like $4.
That's good.
Yeah, check it out. It's got like the cap is waxed and everything. It's incredible. Yeah, the bottle's great.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, so I walk up. There's no price on the thing, right? I'm like, oh, man, this thing's going to be so expensive. So
right.
I sit there and the guy scans it. It's like, you know, $3.99 or whatever it was. I think that's what it was. And I'm like, oh, so I went and got a second one.
Awesome.
Okay, let's see if I can get past the wax on this thing here.
Okay.
You know what? We're going to have to take a break. I'm going to go get a knife and see if I can chip away at this thing. I'll be right back.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com, and you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it.
All right, I'm back. Hopefully I don't lose a finger here. Wow, they really have the wax on this thing. Uh-oh. Whew. Slipped a little bit. Good thing my finger wasn't in the way. Dude, I should have, like, got this ready, like, sooner. Holy moly. This makes for great live-as-it-happens podcasting. Let's see if I have enough to crack it open.
That's right.
How's the Carmelite?
The Carmelite is nice, but you know how it is. It's a nice, mellow.
Oh, there we go. It went flying.
3-grain beer.
Okay.
All right. Here it comes.
Let's see. Oh, the smell, man. It's like I'm drinking whiskey or something. Well, I guess bourbon. No, what did it say? Brandy. Yeah, brandy barrel aged. Get some ASMR up on in here. All right.
Not with you talking over
it
like that.
We'll let that go down. Oh, it smells incredible.
Looks super dark.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. Porter. I don't know how they figure that out. I mean, it's almost darker than a stout. So while that's going down, well, you wanted to cover Barry. You said it dropped today, huh?
There's a new Barry season 2 trailer. And this is interesting because you hated it.
Yeah, I didn't like the trailer at all. If this was the thing, like I just happened upon this trailer, I'm like, oh, I heard Barry's good. Let me watch it. I'd be like, yeah, this wouldn't make me want to watch. I don't know why. It just it doesn't entice me.
Yeah. So this is an instance of something. And I watched it again after you said that. And I finished watching the season 1 2 days ago.
That might be part of it, though, because you kind of have, you're invested in the characters.
That's totally part of it.
You know what's going on. There's probably backstory to some of the scenes, whatever it is. I'm going in cold. Perhaps if this was like a season 1 trailer never before aired, then it's like everybody's going in cold and there's no, like, I don't have to have any prior knowledge. So maybe that's why I'm not into it.
It's Yeah, it's a completely different sell.
Exactly, exactly. Real quick, this is like amazing chocolate, like chocolate forward, complete brandy on the barrel. I mean, it is amazing. This is amazing. Wow.
I'm super jealous.
Oh, Ted.
I'm super jealous right now.
Like, and when they told me, like I said, like you said, $14.99 or whatever it was for a can IPA. Like, I was expecting that much for this just by the sheer fact of the amount of wax that was on the top. But for the
there's a good $5 worth of wax there.
But for the $4 that this thing was, or whatever the heck I said it was, I think $4. Oh, complete. I'm glad I got a second one. Complete amazement.
No, you have to.
Oh, you have to.
No, like that's minimum $7.99 to Handy Market for anything that says aged in any kind of barrel. Your starting price is $7.99, and it's probably more like $12. The $12 is like your mean.
Yeah, and you don't really taste the grain in it too much. You taste a lot of chocolate. You taste a lot of the coffee. And definitely the brandy makes it, is probably the most forward flavor that hits you and rests on your palate after you're done and kind of stays with you. So if you don't really like a brandy, I mean, you probably wouldn't really care for this. But wow, it's really like full-bodied flavor. Incredible. I highly recommend it. Okay, sorry to interrupt. But I had to just go. Rave.
No worries. Yeah. So Barry, I just watched the first season. I watched the first season in the matter of a week, less than a week. It's only 4 hours long. It's, you know, eight half hour episodes. So, and it was an amazing show, a show that was completely, I didn't expect it. It had some critical success, critical acclaim.
That's what they said.
Henry Winkler is in it. He plays a great acting teacher. It shows LA in kind of this grittiness. So season one, I don't know, I guess I'm kind of jumping around because that's kind of my now watching. I have a bunch of now watchings, but we'll save that for the end. But we'll wrap Barry into this part because it really, this trailer is the season two sell. It's not actually trying to get you, Jim, who hasn't seen the first season, you know? Its only audience is the subset audience of people that saw season one, and let's get them excited about seeing season two. So it's playing every joke is an inside joke. NoHo Hank has a wig on in the store, and you don't know who NoHo Hank is because you didn't see the first season.
And the inside jokes, are those from the first season too?
Well, to me, the inside jokes are just revisiting each character.
Oh, I see.
You know, all these characters are so specific, and we've gone through this journey of a season with these characters. And you know the guy who holds up the shorts in the when he's trying to buy lady shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got that that crazy wig on, and he's actually a bald guy. He's a bald Chechenian killer. His name is NoHo Hank, and he has some of the greatest like lines and the greatest scenes in the first season. So
when I was a kid, I saw him once walking out the discotheque. He flicked cigarette at bird, knocked it out of sky.
So he's out of like North Hollywood.
Yeah, but I mean, it's so funny to, you know, to be here and to see like this gritty, dirtier side of Hollywood. And then, like I was saying last week, you know, the killing in this show is so much more heartfelt and so much more real and heavy to life. You know, when this assassin kills people, it weighs on his soul, you know, and it's kind of amazing to do that. So I tried to figure it out. I wondered why this show was hitting me so hard, and I figured it out. I figured out what I thought was, and it's, did you watch Breaking Bad?
Yes, I saw the whole thing of Breaking Bad.
So this show, Barry, is Breaking Bad backwards.
Well, who's the assassin? Bill Hader?
Bill Hader's the assassin. There's a bunch of assassins. Our main character, our breakout assassin is Bill Hader, and he's trying to not be an assassin. And throughout the whole first season, he's always like, starting now, I'm not going to kill anyone. And then he goes off and he has to go kill somebody. And then after he kills them, he goes, all right, starting now. You know, that's the whole joke through the first season.
So do they get into how he became an assassin?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Fux is his handler. And he basically he hires him for these jobs, hires him out for these jobs. He comes home from Afghanistan or, yeah, I think Afghanistan, and he's basically got a little PTSD, but he settles into it by becoming an assassin, and he's really good at it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing where the trailer is not trying to deviate. It's not going outside. We're not going to get new people to this show. We just need people that watched the first season to come back. Or if it even piques your interest at all, which it didn't for you, or if your friends are telling you that you have to watch the first season, then you're either going to watch the first season or not, you know? It's kind of a low bar of engagement, you know? Do you have 4 hours to set aside for this?
Well, yeah, and I think watching this trailer after watching the first season might make all the difference in the world for the engagement in the trailer. Like, I was watching it.
100%.
Yeah, and I was watching, I'm just like, meh, it just didn't strike it with me. I mean, I don't know. I like Bill Hader as a character. Yeah, and then, like, are they making jokes? With, like, the guy with the wig and Oho Hank and all this, are they making jokes? Or is that really the guy's shtick as his character? You know, I mean, I knew nothing about it, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, and I kind of had that thought, like, is this guy, like, for real? Or is this just a one-off scene? Or, who, you know, and I mean, I don't know. But anyway, so it sounds like there's a lot backstory.
Yeah. All of the jokes are all situational. You know, the funny thing is that he wants to be an actor, but he's really bad at it. But because he's in an acting class with other people, he still gets the applause and the accolades, and people are still cheering for him. So when he gets that applause, he just kind of falls in love with the idea of being applauded for doing a good job. And throughout the whole first season, he's really bad. He's a really bad actor. And he actually ends up falling into these places where he needs to channel something, but really just the situation that he's in real life, his real life situation is so horrible as an assassin, like killing people, that when this killing of another person weighs on him, he brings it into the classroom and he's not acting. He's really, you know, torn apart by killing these people. And when he's showing that true self, everyone around him saying, like, this is the best acting we've seen. You know what I mean? So it's a funny play on the idea. And that's what, to me, as far as the craft of television or whatever you want to call this media, it's funny to have to show something that is weighing very heavily on a character, and yet that character has to play into a situation where all the people around him are taking him as acting, and then it comes off as comedic. So it's always on this line of, like, oh, we know that Barry himself is getting torn to pieces emotionally, but everyone around him is like the comedic foil. So he's kind of like the straight man, and everyone else is kind of the jokers around him. But it's just a very interesting juxtaposition. That's why I say it's like Breaking Bad, because when Walt is going through his metamorphosis, it's basically, you know, a person, a fish out of water story. You know, we talked about that before. And this is the fish out of water, except instead of Walt's situation where he becomes the drug dealer, he becomes the criminal, and he has to pretend like he's a criminal, and he has to pretend like he's hard, and by the end, he's a hard-killing criminal, right?
Now, say my name. Heisenberg. You're goddamn right.
But here, it's the exact opposite. He's a hard-killing criminal, and he wants to be normal. You know, he wants to be a real boy. So he puts himself in this situation where he can be amongst actors and be rewarded for just trying to pretend like he's a normal person.
So is that his way of, like, getting out of being an assassin? His assassinhood is like, well, I'm going to quit assassinating. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go be an actor.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's hard to say, like, you know, he made a lot of money. There's a lot of, you know, money jokes back and forth. And I think that's the thing. It looks like he gets a part-time job in the second season, and I can't wait to see him trying to deal with retail.
That's at the clothing store or whatever.
You know, being like...
Okay. I might have to watch it then, so, since you're so excited about it.
Give it a couple episodes. See if it draws you in. I do agree that... I tried to take myself out of the idea of having seen the first season, and that's really it. You know, they were narrow casting. They were trying to get the audience that was already there to just come back.
So rather than establishing, or maybe not establishing, rather than growing the audience, they just want the people who are already into it to just keep going.
Yes. Can they maintain? Because maintaining is very hard in and of itself, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
With so many things to watch, so many choices to make, you want people to be excited and come back.
And if you think about it, whatever the percentage of viewership is across the whole spectrum of television, premium television like HBO, streaming television like Netflix or Prime, and then you're looking at just like nonsense YouTube videos and podcasts and, you know, sleep, you know? So with all this...
and bike training.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, your attention is drawn in a thousand ways. So even if you have like a small percentage, you want to keep that percentage going, because that's the bread and butter of that show, to be able to sell numbers to just the production company to keep it going or whatever. You know what I mean? Well, maybe for the production company to sell to HBO to keep it going.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, maybe I will check out the first season and then I can report back on season 2 trailer and be like, oh, now it makes sense. I get it.
Now it makes sense.
So the Highwaymen, I hear they're live at the Coliseum.
I think they're playing at the Greek.
Yeah. Oh, they're at the Greek. You know who they are, right?
No, who's that?
The Highwaymen? They're like the country. They're like the country supergroup.
No, who's that?
Johnny Cash. Yeah.
Oh, is that the Highwaymen? I thought that was the Traveling Wilsburys.
No, that's a whole other thing. No, but then we have Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, and Kris Kristofferson. Those are the Highwaymen. Yeah. So.
Oh, those are the Highwaymen. Okay. I was thinking Roy Orbison and Tom Petty and.
Yeah, that's the Traveling Wilburys. Yeah, I guess there's too many country music supergroups. And then, but there's only one ABBA. The Swedish supergroup.
Agneta, Bjorn, Benny, and Annifred.
No, this is my kind of movie, man.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking of all the movies this week, I think The Highwaymen I chose for you.
Like, I'm throwing the dice and I'm all in. No, seriously, though. No. You have good actors based on a true story, which I love that kind of stuff. There's gunplay. And there's like 40 mile per hour car chases.
Hey, it could still kill.
Yeah, and I love when they show the Model A Ford and it like does like the sideways kind of slide, like it's really going that fast.
Yeah, it's the Fast and the Furious.
And then Woody Harrelson like sticks his head out the window like he's about to shoot, you know, but they're going like so slow like his hat doesn't even fly off. No, it looks great though, man. But here's one question though. It's 1934. And when they talk about, hey, come, like, are you packing or whatever? And he pulls out the toothbrush. And Kevin Costner says, Judas Priest. I mean, is that line relevant for 1934? Yeah. Or is it more like not the band, but the biblical reference or something? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was like, it was an interesting thing that maybe people actually did say back in the day, but I don't know. I assumed that somebody technical out there was making some kind of notes.
I don't know. You know, one thing I always said, like,
what do you think?
The thing that I would love to have done, like maybe as like a like, if, you know, you go back to do a prior career, like if you could do anything, what would it be? Like one of those things would be like a historian for like the film industry, right? A movie studio, like Paramount Movies or something. Because like, I like history. I like these kind of stories, you know, and you go back and you have to like down to like the cereal box on the shelf. You have to go back and figure out what was it that was in 1934. Like, how did they dress? What the cars look like? You know, like a box of flour, you know, or a bag of flour, whatever you want to call it. You got to make sure you get the one with the right label. Otherwise, you know,
right?
Because, you know, especially in today with the internet, right? I mean, people can just Google anything, and all of a sudden, there it is. Like, you're on the hook for like screwing up like the bag of flour.
So you want to do a research for period piece films?
I think that would be cool. You don't.
That would be. No, I think it'd be awesome. I think you and Anne can have a great time doing this, and Clarissa and I will figure out what else we can do. How we could actually make money and for life, because I don't think you make a lot of money doing that.
You don't think so?
I don't know. You think so?
I mean, you're going to be like the person who's doing wardrobe and all this stuff for like 300. You're telling me that person's not making bank? The guy who's...
Okay, maybe.
Well, okay.
But how long did it take them to get there? And how many roles are there for the guy who does the ward, the guy or girl who does wardrobe for 300?
Ted, let's not step on my fantasy.
Don't you think they can do it for like so many movies? So like there's only like five of those guys.
Okay, I didn't say I'm going to do it for real. Okay. Right? If I could be one of those five guys, you know, like Kevin Costner, right? I see him in a period piece like this. First thing I think is him going back to the Untouchables, right? You know, they're in Chicago, yep. And it's like Al Capone, the whole nine. Now it's the kind of the same thing, you know, it's same time period and everything, same gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that point or that time in history is really awesome because the Great Depression, you know, I mean, it led people like to be kidnappers and people did what they did to make ends meet if they had to, you know, and there were people that still had money. There were people that still were working.
Definitely.
You know, there was just a lot of people that weren't. But the other thing, too, I was wondering, 1934, a woman governor. That's like in Texas, nonetheless. Again, you got to go back. You got to check these things out, right? So Miriam Ferguson.
Right.
She died in 1961. But I mean, a woman governor in the 30s. That's incredible.
It's amazing. I had no idea. I just thought they did that to get Kathy Bates in there. It's like Kathy Bates says, I'll be in your movie, and you're like, all right, I'll make a governor woman 1930, whatever. but you're telling me it's real.
No, I thought the same thing. I'm like, really? 1934, a Texas woman governor? Look it up. Sure enough, man, a Texas woman governor. She must have been like the only woman governor for, I mean, I didn't do any further research, but I mean, that's a, you know, what I'm saying though is, I mean, think about where our country was in the 30s, and I mean, you know, like misogyny or whatever it is, right? And then here's like a woman governor, like, mm-hmm. Wow, amazing. Just, and that's the thing. It's like there's things in history that you learn, even if it's just from a movie, you know, and that's the other thing, I guess, is like, right. What's the artistic license that you give to the writer and director on something like this versus, you know, like fact versus, I won't even say fiction, but fact versus artistic license. So it seems like it's pretty, there's some good fact here, I guess. And I don't know, Bonnie and Clyde, though, man, they're like notorious. You gonna watch it?
That's amazing. I'm gonna watch it because it's Netflix. It's too easy to watch it, right?
Yeah, and I love the musical score.
Yeah, you know, the musical score, but when the music kicked on, I thought, it was kind of a little bit of phoning it in. It felt like it was proper to the period, but it wasn't breaking any new ground. It was not.
No, I would agree with that.
It wasn't distracting. But there was nothing special about the music at the time.
I just like how it blends into the action.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the way that this continues I have an overarching theory about Netflix programming, and it's just like, it is a hodgepodge of comfort characters and situations. You know, this, it really hits you. So I know we don't do my three-word reviews anymore. But this one just kind of naturally hit me as a true Untouchable detectives, because, you know, you have Untouchables with Kevin Costner, right? You know that people like him in this time period as a lawman.
Right.
You know what I mean? From Elliot Ness to this guy, not a reach. You know, everyone's comfortable. Everyone understands what he is. And then you have Woody Harrelson talking to his partner, you know, in a car. And that's what true detective was for, you know, the whole first season. So
right.
It's kind of like everything that you find comforting in both film and television, we'll put it together and put it on our air.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, and like we always say about Netflix, you know, they're looking at the data to see what people are liking. They know when people turn it on, turn it off, pause, resume, like they have all that data. So they're like, all right, well, here's how we're going to make this thing and do the scenes and whatever. I mean, I'm sure that plays into some of it. And you're right. I mean, they look at what people like viewing habits habits and the kind of shows people are in, so let's just make that.
I almost added another Netflix trailer that came out this week. I think it's called Dirty or Dirt or something like that. And it's about Motley Crue. It's a Motley Crue biopic. And it's almost like, oh, Bohemian Rhapsody did well in the box office. You know, we have Rocket Man coming out about Elton John and
Little Rocket Man.
All these singer-songwriter music biopics are coming out. Let's throw together our own biopic about Motley Crue. And I so want to see that. And I was teetering on the edge of which Netflix trailer to put in this week. And it was actually, I put in The Highwayman because of you.
There you go.
I think Jimmy would like this other one. And Fighting With My Family was my pick for the week. So I have to do give and take with you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to briefly ask about Dirty. It's not a documentary though. It's more like a biopic, like a Bohemian Rhapsody biopic.
Yeah, I would say.
Right. Okay. Because I did not watch it, so I'm just, you know, because you just brought it up now.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, other than that, The Highwayman. I mean, I don't really have much else to say other than, you know, I'd like to be the guy who does the research for like what can of corn to have in the grocery store.
I think you're losing a little bit of credibility. You should say general store, because I'm pretty sure it was not a grocery store.
The village market.
Market, general store. Yeah, we can stick with this.
Where you went to go get your feed. All right, so you brought it up. Fighting with the family. Yeah, it looks like a cute family comedy.
It does, and it's kind of... we talked a little bit about not hitting all four quadrants, but this really feels like a four quadrant movie. And it's hilarious to me because of the way this movie came at me. I knew this movie was coming out. I'm a fan of The Rock. But my daughter, 13-year-old Audrey, she came to me 2 weeks ago and she goes, "Do you think I can see Fighting With My Family?" And I was totally caught off guard. You know, she is a fan of The Rock a little bit, but she's not a fan of wrestling. She's not a fan of this genre of film. She's not a big fan of like comedies like this. But their MGM and WWE is hitting up Instagram really, really hard. They're hitting that millennial market, the preteen market, the teen market. And I think this movie has great potential to tap into every segment of audience. I think that, you know, you have these diehard wrestling fans that will eat up anything that comes out of the wrestling world, you know, and then you layer on Stephen Merchant, who's a great writer, actor, and I guess he directed this as well. And you kind of spin this into this family comedy, and you have like this perfect storm. So I think this movie is going to do gangbusters, and I think it's marketing itself exactly right to every single audience.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you have the wrestling audience, which, I mean, people who are into wrestling, it's like all ages, you know, men, women, whatever, dads, their kids, moms get involved, I'm sure. So you hit all that. And then it has kind of that woman power, you know, vibe to it.
Oh, definitely.
And yet it brings in like the teenage boy or the horny old man with all the good looking women. Right? So like you're hitting everybody.
If you could have a movie that shows a lead female character that is not being objectified and yet show bikini models next to her wishing that they were her.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean? It was like this perfect, it's this perfect balance of like, wow, I want to see that. And guess what? Even though it has this objective, you know, what is it called? Objectification of some of the characters, I still am not put off enough to say that my daughter couldn't see this.
Well, I think they do it in a way that it's comedic. It's in a way it's kind of backhanded, where it's like, you know, they show the woman drying off with the bikini or whatever, and she's like, "Oh my God, I am so envious of you," you know, or whatever it is. And it's like funny, but then you're like, I don't know. It's kind of like backwards in a way, whatever. But you know, I think it works.
I think it works. And like I said, as a father, I've become very protective of the situations. So it is funny to me to say, like, ooh, if it was only the bikini models hanging around the pool, then no, then there's no reason for, you know, my daughter or my wife or anyone else to see it. But I just believe in Stephen Merchant. I believe he can sell us into this comedic space. It feels like a family thing, you know? It's got your Game of Thrones angle.
And what's the Game of Thrones angle?
Did you see her in there?
Oh, yes. The woman who plays Cersei.
It has the...
whatever her name is. Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so what you're saying is, if it was Blue in the ring mud wrestling, you probably wouldn't let Audrey see it.
You're my boy, Blue!
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
If it was old school, then there's no reason for Audrey to see it. But it's got Vince Vaughn in it, and it's not, you know, it's not all Blue jokes, I guess.
Well, and they do touch on some of those jokes a little bit.
No, it's great. They skirt it, and it's almost like those jokes that we talk about in animation, where the jokes just fly over the kids' heads, you know? And when Vince Vaughn's like, put it together, don't break your sentence there, you know? It's like, it doesn't even matter, because it can go over a teenager's head, you know, if it has to.
Yeah, Lena Headey is the woman who is the Game of Thrones connection.
Awesome.
So, fighting with my family, I do like the double entendre title, too, because it's like, I'm fighting with my family, but because I'm a wrestler, and they're like on my team, like I'm fighting with my family.
Right. You're fighting along with your family, or fighting within the family. Yes.
Yeah. So I think the title is pretty cool, because it kind of goes down a couple different paths that the movie could certainly go down. So I think that's a good touch. All right. Twilight Zone.
All right. I picked this one just for your initial reaction. So hit us with your initial reaction, because I watched this one and I thought, how would Jimmy respond to this? And then I said, oh, I think I know. But Jimmy, give us your first thought, your hot take on this.
Well, I have maybe three, if that's okay. My first one is William Shatner going to be in it?
Okay.
Because like, he was in so many episodes of the original, and like the original like launched his career.
Yeah, yeah.
Second thing is, does it work as a non-black and white? Like, I'm a huge fan of The Twilight Zone. It's one of my favorite all-time shows.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, I grew up with The Twilight Zone. Me and my family would watch The Twilight Zone, like, reruns over and over. My mom comes to visit, you know, like, from Chicago and stuff. She comes over, and, like, we still watch The Twilight Zone to this day.
That's awesome. But not the movie, right? The movie is a bastard stepchild of the series, right?
You're talking about the modern day movie, not the...
Yeah, the movie from like 20 years ago where...
Like in the 90s or something.
The kids died.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the kids died and Landis had to go on trial.
Yeah, no, not that movie. That was with the helicopter or something, right?
Yeah, the helicopter accident. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the original show with Rod Serling.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Peele, I think, is going to be fine. You know, I don't, you know, he's probably going to play the Rod Serling role of like, introducing what it is. I'm assuming it's going to be a bunch of one-offs. I mean, wouldn't you say? I don't think they're going to make it serial. It felt serial.
So it really felt like there was going to be it felt like there was a through line. It felt like they were going to do a season with some kind of woven storyline throughout. It definitely felt more like you said, like a serial. So I'm very interested to see what he does with it. I think Jordan Peele is so hot right now that he could do anything and people would love it. He's in Toy Story 4. He has his second movie, Us, coming out this month. So he could do no wrong right about now. And I don't know what kind of creative control he has within this. Like you said, like, he's going to be introducing it. But what is that production or that name over the title give you as far as control over the series, you know? And it felt like it was so cohesive, and you didn't do the thing, I guess, because you're such a fan of the original. To me, this trailer lost me all over the place. Like, I had no idea where it was coming and going, and chronologically it didn't make any sense.
Well, that's why I think it feels like a serial, is because they're just picking and pulling from everywhere, and it's all intertwined. I don't know. You're right, though. I agree with that. It's all over the place.
And I always thought, you know, Jimmy likes, you know, if they're telling a story, he likes them to, likes you and the trailer to tell the story.
Yeah, there was no story. All they did was show a bunch of...
There's no story in here.
Not at all.
Yeah, and it was just, the confusion is the story though, right?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. So the main thing, I think, with the way the trailer is, if it is a one-off, like if every episode is a one-off, then they did a fantastic job of confusing you. Do you know what I mean? Because you're watching it and you're like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that must be for that episode. And then like 10 seconds later, you know, then they show like a scene. It's like, oh, well, there's back to. So if you pull out all the different scenes and you made your own cut to put it all together, you could probably make something that makes sense, right?
Right.
Maybe they're showing clips from like 5 different episodes or whatever it is, but they just kind of like, you know, like throw the cards 52 pickup and everything just goes scrambled everywhere. And then there's your right. trailer. So it doesn't make sense of anything. They're just showing you a bunch of random clips that are from random episodes. And let me finish too by saying the thing I like about the original being the one-offs that they are, and kind of like this show Black Mirror, those are a bunch of one-offs as well. And Black Mirror is like kind of a modern day Twilight Zone is what I got from it. You know, you watch the episodes, but they bring in the computer, everything like social media and how the tech industry has infiltrated our lives. And they just make it like the worst case scenario Twilight Zone thing with that. So I could see Twilight's...
Right. It's like a tech Twilight Zone.
Yeah, and I could see the Twilight Zone going that direction. And I like that, though, because you can pick it up, you can put it down, you can watch it out of order. It doesn't even matter, you know? It's like you could just watch... You know, you could be like, well, this episode's not any good, and you could skip ahead if you wanted to, and you don't lose anything, you know? And I like that.
Right.
I would say, though, the bottom line is, and as I mentioned, like one of the endearing things I like about the Twilight Zone and the thing that brings me into the show is that it is black and white. Reason I say that is the color removes the distractions of the visual.
Mm.
You know, and let's face it, like the technology at the time and everything that goes on with, I don't know, what do you call it? Like the sci-fi, like, what do you call it? Like where, you know, Star Wars has like the green screen stuff and everything, you know?
Oh, yeah, the visual effects or...
Yeah, the visual effects or whatever. Like, they didn't have that stuff. I mean, it was like wind-up robots or something from the toy store that are invading the planet Earth. And you're just like, really? That's really what's invading the planet? You know, but the thing is, the black and white removes you from the fact that it's just like a kid's toy that they just got somewhere. And it really puts you into the scene to be like, oh, man, these guys are like really... on a deserted planet. Oh, next thing you know, like,
okay,
the deserted planet is just the Mojave Desert. Oh, wow, I couldn't believe it, you know, kind of a thing.
So it's in film school, we called those alienation techniques. So if you felt alienated from being able to buy into something being real, then you were paying the price as an audience to get into it, but it allowed the filmmakers to do more with what they were doing. So it was kind of like, oh, you have to suspend disbelief because it's black and white. But then, you know, you had more freedom as the filmmaker within that space because your audience had already bought into the idea that they were watching something.
Yeah. And as a photographer, I love black and white photography because sometimes color can be distracting from the story you're trying to tell. So in other words, you want to draw your attention to, you know, like the eyes of, you know, the portrait that you're taking of whoever it might be, but there's crazy red lights in the background from car traffic or something that would be totally distracting. But you create a black and white in that image, and now your focus is completely on the person in the portrait and this, you know, the expressions on their face and everything, and you're taking taking out everything, yeah, and all you're doing is telling a story with an expression and maybe the sadness in their eyes or the joy in their eyes or whatever it might be. But all that color disappears and removes like layers that the brain doesn't have to like process.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, and you know, I don't know. I mean, and maybe in the modern world, you know, you'd lose a lot of people if it was black and white. I don't know.
So the big question is, will you pay $5.99 a month to see this?
You know what? You beat me to the punch. That was my next question. What I would say is it all released at once or is it like a weekly release?
It's a weekly release, but I'm sure you could do it at the end. Maybe Ann and I will save up this. I think Star Trek Discovery is out right now, season 2. We haven't turned our subscription back on. Basically, CBS All Access feels like it's going in for this. You know, they're trying to spread out their shows to kind of make you, you know, to boil the, what is it, to boil the frogs and just make people pay the $5.99 a month. And then like, oh, you paid $5.99 a month for 2 months to watch Star Trek Discovery. Oh, now there's 2 months of Jordan Peele's, you know, Twilight Zone. Oh, you're already at 4 months of the year. You know, why not watch the rest of it? And if they can string together these high profile shows, you know, you string together a few of them and people want to be in that water cooler conversation over these handful of shows, then maybe they'll, you know, plop down that $5.99 a month. It feels like that's too high of a price for what they have going on, but I think that's just the, because we're used to paying less for more.
I don't have a problem paying $5.99 a month for a streaming service. I think where the issue gets elevated is when you're looking at like in what I'll call subscription fatigue, right?
Yeah.
Whatever the prices are, I'll just say $10, you know, make it simple, round numbers. You know, $10 for Hulu, $10 for Netflix, $10 for HBO, $10 for Stars, $10 for CBS, $10 for all these things. And $10 in and of itself isn't a lot of money. But, you know, you cut the cord and people are tired of paying like $80, $100 a month for cable. So they say, oh, well, I'm going to cut the cord and go all streaming. And that's great. But by the time you're done, you're streaming all this stuff. And instead of one bill for $100, you have, you know, 10 bills for $10. Like, it's $100. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The main issue that I have then is Amazon Prime right now, you know, kind of like to get into what you're watching a little bit. We're now in the third season of Man in the High Castle.
Oh, is that good?
So far, it's pretty good. I mean, they're more introducing, like we're only in the second episode, you know, I mean, we just started it. But so far, it's not bad.
Yeah.
But with Prime comes a number of other, like, I don't know, benefits, I guess, you know, the 2-day shipping.
Of course.
The Prime video, yeah. The Prime photos, you know, you get all this other stuff, but whatever.
Right.
And what is Prime, like $10.99 or something like that? And then you're looking at
it's like $120 a year. Yeah. Right.
It's something like that. Something, yeah. So, or maybe it's $9.99, $10.99, whatever. But the boys will watch, like today they watched Jurassic Legos or Lego Jurassic Park or whatever it was called. So they'll watch Prime videos once in a while and they'll watch like Netflix stuff with other shows that they do. So we pay for both, but Prime is layered with other things that like keep us with Prime. You know what I mean? It's not strictly a streaming service because I have to say, if it was strictly a streaming service, we probably wouldn't have it because we don't use it that much.
Of course.
But then there's things on Hulu that I'd like to watch and, you know, and this one, CBS All Access and so on. But the biggest issue that I have is like, we literally watch TV maybe one night during the week for like an hour. We watch something, which is right now at Man in the High Castle. And then on the weekends, now we've been doing the Marvel movies, like on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So tomorrow night we have the Avengers.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have the time because of going to bed and getting the boys to bed and just doing like whatever the heck I got going on. I'm a busy guy. I don't have the time to sit in front of the TV all this stuff, you know, and to pay all these subscription fees, you know, to just like, now the Roku is going to be, supposedly you're going to be able to turn it on and turn it off, like whatever fee or subscription emotion you want. Watch a series, turn it off. Turn on a new service, watch that, turn it off. You know, and they're supposed to make it pretty seamless so you don't get the, like, I don't know, what would you call it? Like the subscription cancellation guy who comes on to try and talk you into keeping you for, you know, more shows or something, you know what I mean?
So what is that price point? Have they said that what that is yet?
The price point for, oh, no, what I think it is, I don't think it's a price point. What I think it is, they're just going to allow you to have your card on file or something. From what I was reading an article about it, you're going to have like your card on file and like you just like turn on like Showtime or something. And I don't know if Showtime, I'm just saying that, you know, I don't know which.
Picking something, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm getting at is I don't want someone to like email and be like, ah, Showtime's not included. You said it's included, you know, like I don't know what's included, but whatever, like Stars, right?
Right.
I want to watch, you know, a show on Stars. So I just log in and then they just charge me. But when I'm done with it, I log out and all of a sudden, like, it just ends. Like, they don't continue. It's not, in other words, it's not a negative option subscription where it keeps going until I raise a stink until it stops, right? So I think with the Roku, the thing that I like about that is that kind of model is that I can start and stop based on a show and pay for it at that rate. Like for right now, Man in the High Castle, we binge it, we watch it for the month or whatever it is, we turn it off, and then we go, like, we jump over to Hulu, we watch some show there, we turn it off, we jump back over to Netflix, we watch, then we turn it off. You know, like, that's kind of what they're doing. So like, you're always in that $10.99 a month, but you're not multiplying it by 10 services.
Huh, that's interesting, because I would think that you would have to have a separate deal between Roku and all those services, or else, I don't know. I guess we have to read more about how this works. But the only way...
Yeah, we do need to research a little bit more, but that's the way, from what I've read, that's the way I understand it's supposed to go, yeah.
That's the way it reads.
Yeah, and HBO is not, currently is not a participating in that program.
And it, like you said, Amazon doesn't make sense to participate in that program.
I mean, Amazon, I don't think does, and I don't think Netflix does either. I think it's more channel-based.
Oh, okay. So the CBS All Access and the Hulus.
Maybe AMC, Stars, yeah, like...
Oh, okay.
There's going to be, you know, like, it's more channel-based.
I see.
Rather than, like, service-based. Like, I would say Hulu is a service, or Netflix would be, like, a service. And those you could turn on and off as you want. I don't think there's really an issue with those. It's more for the shows that were previously tied to, like, the cable companies is what I think they're targeting.
Right. I get it.
You know what I mean? So you want to watch The Americans, for example.
Yes.
But you don't want to subscribe to cable to get it. And you're not really into, you know, all the other shows on AMC or whatever. So you just want to watch this one show.
Uh-huh.
So you turn on AMC for like, you know, a month. You binge all The Americans and then you turn it off and then you jump over to like Stars or something.
Is that AMC or FX?
Oh, maybe it's FX. I forget. But you get the idea, though.
Anyway. Whatever it is, you wouldn't even have to care, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, if those channels are like, say, you know, $8 a month or something, yeah, you're watching one channel, $8 for what you're getting. I mean, what's renting a movie? Renting a movie's $4, right? So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
It just becomes a big deal when you're multiplying it by 15 channels, and all of a sudden...
That's my understanding, is like, if you say, log into FX and you pay for that month, and then you turn off that service, I don't think it prorates it for you. I don't think they say, oh, you only use it for, you know, 5 days in the month, so I'll give you, you know, $6-7 back, you know?
No, I don't think it prorates it. But what I'm saying is, though, like, you could probably just do that anyway, right? Subscribe, cancel, subscribe, cancel. You could do it anyway, right, for whatever shows you want to watch. I think what Roku is doing is, I think they're just making it easy for you,
right,
to just turn it on, turn it off, like, as you want to watch the shows.
Well, this idea kind of folds into my what we're watching this week. Can we head over to that area?
Definitely, go for it.
Okay. So I've been doing the Marvel Cinematic Universe Challenge, like you have. You turned back on DVD.com, which I guess is a Netflix company, right? Is that what it says?
DVD.com. Well, I don't know. I'm getting the Blu-rays through Netflix. Is that?
Yeah, but I'm saying it's the Netflix. Actually, they split off that company and it's now called DVD.com. You sent me a screen grab and I was looking at the screen grab and I was like, I thought he did Netflix. And it says at the top of there, it says DVD.com, a Netflix company.
Oh, okay. I didn't even notice.
So I thought that was interesting.
Well, it goes through my Netflix account, though.
Yeah. No, they do that, but it's funny. They've separated themselves,
right,
from the concept of the brand of Netflix. But I did something different. I went to an actual live video store, a local video store, Star Video here in the Valley, and I've started renting movies. And they have this deal, like Monday through Thursday, you rent three movies, you get a fourth movie rental for free. So it kind of, you know, we kind of said, let's rent four movies because you get a movie for free. But then you have four movies and you only have 5 days to watch it. So it really creates this pressure to, you know, to utilize the money that you spent on renting this movie. Like, you know, with Redbox, it's $2 or $2.50 a day. And then you go to the Redbox and you have to rent it and then you have to watch it that night. So there's this immediacy that really drives you to say like, oh, are you going to watch something tonight? Do you have time to watch something tonight? And I'm usually like, no, I don't have time to watch something tonight. So then I don't rent from Redbox and I usually have long spans of not renting from Redbox. And then on the whole complete other side of the spectrum, we have Netflix and you have all the streaming services like we're talking about. And, you know, you don't have any pressure to watch any of that stuff because it's streaming. You don't really know when it's going to stop being streamed or the, you know, what the license agreement is with that feature.
Well, and if it's a Netflix original, you don't have to worry about when it's going to stop being streamed. It's always there.
Exactly. So there's absolutely no pressure to watch anything in that space. But this idea of 5 days to watch something and you're renting four movies, it is like, to me, it is the perfect amount of pressure to watch something every night or to try to make time in your schedule to watch things. And it's so funny because last weekend we had four movies. I think we ended up having like six movies because of the overlap. And we watched all the movies. I saw Bad Times at El Royale. I saw Mile 22. Anne and I watched Overboard. Was not a fan of Overboard, but it was hilarious because I was actually like forcing myself. Oh, and I also watched Red Sparrow. Also not a fan of Red Sparrow.
No, huh?
No. But Mile 22, I thought was phenomenal. I started over. I made Anne watch it with me. It was a great action movie.
What, did you hold her at gunpoint or something?
No, I said there's Mark Wahlberg in it, and and it's a great action movie. And then Bad Times at El Royale, I thought it was great as well. It was really underappreciated movie of this year. But then I thought, like, why am I watching these? I'm actually making time to see them because I paid with the anticipation of saying, oh, yeah, I have time over the next 5 days to watch this,
right?
Even though maybe I don't. So then I ended up like forcing myself to make time for these things, which was a very interesting space to be in. And it's like an interesting model to kind of feel nostalgic for.
Yeah. And when you go to the video store, is it like old school video store where like there's the movies on the shelf and...
Oh yeah. It feels just like Blockbuster.
So prior to Blockbuster, like the mom and pops too. I mean, it's kind of a mom and pop, right?
It is a mom and pop, but I think it was a Blockbuster and they just took over.
Oh, I see.
And they, you know, they took the marquee down and now it's Star Video.
And it's the same kind of like square footage and layout and everything of a Blockbuster.
Oh yeah, exactly the same.
Are they crowded? Are they busy?
They're not busy.
So how are they staying in business, do you think?
Not busy at all. I don't know. I think, you know, there's service. There's always somebody in there. I don't know how they stay in business.
Like when you go in, there's other people.
There's usually other people there, yes.
So, I mean, maybe they have like a deal on the rent and it's not that bad and, you know, they could stay afloat.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. They just believe in the video store concept.
It is nice to have.
Dude, if I were in the Valley, I would totally go there because... just, I believe in independent businesses that way.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It has a laundromat next to it in the little strip mall that it's in and a couple little stores, and that's it.
And it's in Burbank?
Oh, no. It's in, I don't even know what it's called. It's halfway between Tarzana and Burbank.
Oh, okay.
So it's like Van Nuys. It's in Van Nuys.
Yeah, but nobody wants to be called Van Nuys, so they call it like Valley Village or something, right?
Yeah, something like that.
It's like, and this is just some LA stuff for anybody who's not from LA, like you could tune out, but yeah, it's like everybody, like Van Nuys was like half the valley. Now it's Lake Balboa, you know, or whatever. It's like some like posh name that's anything but Van Nuys, you know. It's just so hilarious,
right?
Yeah, so one of the things I'm doing with my training is an indoor trainer, like a mag trainer.
What's that?
So, you know, you put your bike in like a station, you put your actual road bike in a stationary trainer.
Oh.
And then it gives like resistance.
Yeah.
And then you use your gears to do the shifting. And what I do is there's this workout series that I have. You know, I do this and I watch Netflix videos to distract me. So like at 5 a.m, there's me and Clarissa on the indoor trainer doing these workouts. And I put on like some Netflix stuff like Blue Planet 2 or something. And like, it's just this, it's a suffer fest like for like an hour. And she's like, you know, and she's missing the shifts, you know, that she needs to be doing. So I'm like, Clarissa, it's the other gear. And she goes, well, then why did you put on Blue Planet? I can't pay attention to both. I'm like, Blue Planet's supposed to distract us, you know? And she goes, well, you know, this thing's distracting me. I can't, you know. Anyway, so I've done a bunch by myself, not with her, but while doing that, I've been watching Dirty Money on Netflix. It's a documentary about all this dirty money. Well, the first episode that got me into it was the Volkswagen scandal. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah. The emissions scandal.
The emissions, yeah. So I used to have a 2010 Volkswagen TDI, you know, the Volkswagen clean diesel that they called it. By far the best car I've ever had. I mean, the thing was awesome. You know, this diesel engine had like crazy power. I mean, it was fast. On the freeway, I'd get 45, 50 miles to the gallon. I mean, the thing was just unbelievable. You know, I mean, it was, like I said, comfortable. I mean, it was like the best car I've ever owned. Loved the car. So this scandal comes out about how they lied about their emissions. So,
oh, I remember you had it when it came out. Yeah.
Yeah. The quick and short of it is that on the emissions test, it ran clean. On the road, it ran dirty. And I'm thinking like, well, how the hell does the car know? You know how they programmed it? when it's being tested?
How?
The steering wheel doesn't move. When you're driving, you're moving the steering wheel. So if you were doing it on the emissions test and all you did was just move the steering wheel around, it would have ran dirty.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's like brilliant, you know? But anyway.
That's so much more simple than I thought. I thought like, ooh, if you stick something in its exhaust pipe, then it would have like a sensor on the exhaust pipe.
No, it recognized when you were manipulating the steering wheel. But the way they lied to the California Air Resource Board, you know, CARB and the federal government of the United States and the whole thing, uh-huh. Like, you know, they owe like billions of dollars. Guys went to prison, the whole thing. But that episode got me into watching Dirty Money. And since it's been like payday loan scams and pharmaceutical scams, like the guy who bought the EpiPen drug or whatever and then like raised the price by like 900%
or whatever.
It was like, it's that stuff. And pretty much it's all about greed, you know, and like just how greed just is the reason why we pay for all this stuff and where everybody's going broke. You know what I mean? And so it's a pretty good one. It's a pretty good one.
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Of course. I'll check that out right after we finish up the Dropout.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things like when you're at work and like you're writing up like a finance report, or I don't know what you do, but you're writing up some report for something and it's just playing on like another screen in the background, but it's kind of like a podcast. And then every once in a while you look over.
Yes.
You know, because you do have to read like what happened to the guy and how many years in prison he actually got, you know, after he got caught. Yeah.
You pause those parts.
It's,
Well, I will say when we listen to The Dropout go on their way to school.
Oh, I love it too. It's great, isn't it?
Whenever anybody says anything in the car, like I always guess, try to figure out who's going to be the first person to tell the other person to be quiet, because they're all trying to pay very close attention to what's going on in the story.
Yeah, I'm definitely up to date on The Dropout, man. It's like amazing. It's so, and the funny thing is I've listened to like four other podcasts where they talk about it, and some of them, one of them's a science podcast, and some of them talk about it from like, they're like the guy who like runs the science podcast I listened to, he was talking about, he goes, yeah, I remember we brought that up a couple of years ago, chalk one up for me for being right, you know? Like, it's just so funny, like so many people are into it, man. It's like and she went to prison, I think.
Well, she's still, I think, I don't know if she's in prison now, but I think she is on her way.
So, but yeah, well, when that HBO series comes on, or not series, I guess, the documentary, whatever comes on. Yeah, I'm going to watch it. So
March 18th.
All right, Ted. Well, what do you say we call it, man?
Awesome. Have a good week.
Yeah, I'll be back at work, and you have a good week. And man, I had another good, another fun time having a conversation with you.
Awesome. See you next week.
All right, Ted, later.
All right, bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.